is go.
Pegasus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Holocom.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's the 9th of July, Friday night edition of the show. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
I am great. We have put together what's going to be a fantastic show tonight. We're skipping the quick hitters. We have reconnected with an old friend. It's been over a year since we've been able to speak with Mudar Zakran. He is the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition, and it has been a wild and dangerous ride for Mudar over the past year, but I gotta say, we are absolutely thrilled to be able to welcome him back to the show. Mudar Zakran, welcome back to Right Side Patriots.
Glad to be here, Craig.
Boy, I'll
Glad
tell you what.
Glad to have you here, Mudar.
The other
Thank
day when we were
me.
Well, the other day when we were able to reconnect with you, it was so wonderful to hear your voice and know that you were okay.
Thank you very much. It was a mutual feeling, obviously.
Yes, you had a tough year.
The tough couple of years, to be honest. Things are progressing right now, all that matters is my family is fine, and all my four children are healthy and fine, and that's actually the most important thing.
Right, that everybody's safe.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, what we're doing tonight, folks, is we're bringing you an intel report on the Middle East, everything Middle East. For people who may not have had the opportunity to hear from Mudar Zakran in the past on Right Side Patriots, Diane, explain a little bit about what Mudar is trying to accomplish specifically in the country of Jordan.
Well, what Mudar is trying to do, in no unsimple terms, is bring democracy to Jordan. In other words, King Abdullah is not serving his people well, and most of his people are Palestinians. Mudar is trying to let them be able to return to their ancestral homeland, which is Jordan. And King Abdullah seems to be fighting this. He's also now crossing some very dangerous lines by making certain ties with Iran. And the people of Jordan need a leader like Mudar, who wants to bring secular democracy, not taking away from the religious aspect of the Jordanian people or the Palestinian people, but bring a secular democracy in the form of the government to Jordan.
Mudar, how are things going with the opposition coalition? Where does your organization stand at this point?
Well, thank you for asking, and I'd like to thank Diane for putting things in perspective. First of all, you actually realize or know for a fact that somebody is influential by the volume of enemies he or she are able to sustain. And as far as the Jordanian opposition coalition, there has been a huge push by the regime in Jordan, by some of the regime loyalists, to claim that, you know, we are not influential. Allow me to explain for the listeners what we've been going through. So this is a very a king who's who literally controls the country to the T, every aspect of life, in a very medieval, actually ancient style of rulership. And we are his only opposition. And therefore, over the past 2 years, we've been subjected to all kind of threats, all kind of, you know, offenses. So over the past 2 years, I've had, you know, my parents threatened, my dad forced to renounce me on camera, a fatwa issued by members, actually active members of the Jordanian government, to get me, quote unquote, beheaded anywhere, be it the United Kingdom where I live, or anywhere else in the world. So basically a fatwa on my head. And the worst part was when they escalated the situation into targeting my wife and children. While for security reasons I can't go into details, they the regime went as far as trying to kidnap my wife and then three children, late 2018, and it was foiled very quickly by the security agencies where I live in the United Kingdom. There also, there was a very clear plot on my life late 2018, which was, I was also notified of. And the people behind it were notified that, you know, we know, stop acting stupid before it's too late. And last but not least, the most significant thing was in September of 2019, when I was flying to Israel secretly to meet a group of Israeli politicians. And I was immediately notified by the Israeli intelligence agencies right upon arrival that, you know, I can't give the details, but they told me that the Jordanian regime had learned of, they overheard details that, you know, they intercept communications in for, you know, rogue elements. And they've heard them talking, obviously, about my arrival in Israel, where I was going to be staying, exact flight time, and this kind of information was never publicized. So the fact they know, and I can't even go into further details, there was a huge risk of my life, and they told me it was in my best interest to leave as quickly as possible and go and return home. And not to basically waste the listeners' time with this, there was one, unfortunately, one Arab journalist who jumped on the issue and claimed that I was kicked out of Israel, which is absolutely not true. Bottom line is, it's been a very, very dangerous ride. But I can, you know, for those who might get concerned, I have all the security I need right now, courtesy of the British government, which is something to be appreciated from their side. Now, with that said, we try to make the best use of your time and the listeners' time by stating everyone about where this is going. Diane and Craig might explain to the dear listeners that I have served with the U.S. Department of State at two very difficult spots in a very senior job with the U.S. Embassy in Amman and Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you work in that line of work, you establish connections to the political and intelligence community, which, you know, diplomacy goes hand in hand with intelligence. So when once you're in that game, you're never actually out of the game. Even though I don't work for the Department of State at the moment, I don't work for the U.S. government at the moment. So we still have access to intelligence, which not many people could necessarily learn of. I think what most listeners would be very interested in, I don't know, it's up to you. You are the managers of this show. I don't know, what should we start with, Iran or maybe Biden's administration in the Middle East, policies in the Middle East?
Well, let's start with Iran, because Iran is making inroads now into Afghanistan, into Jordan. What is the situation there with Iran, and what can you tell us about their plans? Because they've got little proxy armies. They've got Hamas, they've got Hezbollah, they've got outfits in Syria, and now they're trying to buddy up with Jordan and Afghanistan. What's going on with Iran?
Okay, well, I really am going to share what I believe is very important intel, and I really want the listeners' full attention, if they could, because they probably won't hear this anywhere else. First of all, Iran is facing a new Israel. Israel was always a country dependent on the United States, more or less. So therefore, when we had, you know, weak administrations or weaker administrations, it immediately affected the way Israel operated towards Iran. But something changed in the first half of 2020, last year. And while I can't go into details, what changed is Israel managed to obtain a new form of military technology, which is the closest description would be a new form of a weapon of mass destruction, only that it could be controlled. And this is already too much information to give, but it's not like a nuclear weapon. It's above a nuclear weapon, and it makes nuclear weapons obsolete.
Can I take a guess? Can I take a guess, or you can't even say yes or no?
How about we try?
Okay. Is it an advanced form of an EMT?
No, that's actually old.
No. Okay. All right.
Electromagnetic weapons are old now, as far as Israel is concerned and the rest of the world is concerned. So now Israel is one of only four, potentially five countries in the world that possess that technology.
Right.
The technology is the new secret, what I call the super weapon. And the most important thing about it, it could be directed just as much as you need it. So you can use it to destroy a cell phone on somebody's desk without hurting anything else in the room. And it could go through barriers without burning those barriers or destroying them. And so this is, you know, like sci-fi level technology, which could have never been even imaginable just 5 years ago. So okay. Israel obtained that. And now this has shifted Israel from what used to be a regional superpower into a superpower. So Israel is now one of four or five countries in the world with the ultimate technology, which is very similar. It's like this way. Think of a machine gun. Imagine you're in a room where everyone has swords and daggers, and you are only one of four people who hold machine guns. So automatically, all four holders of machine guns are equivalent to one another and superior to everyone else in the field. That being the case, Israel is now operating freely towards Iran with very little concern about what the United States and Europe might say, because Israel is now, again, a superpower. So I'll put it to you in this way. Israel still depends on parts for its jets particularly the F-16 jets, one of the best fighters in the world. And it still depends on imports from the United States. Okay. Without those, there would be no F-16 fleet, or it could, you know, get, you know, damaged. The operation capacity of the Israeli Air Force could get compromised. But with this new weapon, Israel doesn't even need those F-16s.
I have an idea now.
Israel basically now is on a whole new level. So let's fast forward into what's happening now with Iran.
Okay.
And again, I really think the listeners would find an intel here, which they won't find anywhere else. The Israel has been using the new technology on Iran since last October. The first attack was the Natanz nuclear reactor, which is the beating heart of Iran's nuclear program, where Iran actually was able to enrich uranium and able to carry out and operate a fully functional nuclear facility. Many might tell you that Iran is not in that level yet, but in reality, Iran is already at that level. And so by destroying that, the Iranians began putting up all kinds of theories. There was a theory that there was a sleeper agent. There was a theory that the Israelis managed to export a piece of equipment, which was actually a bomb, and then it was detonated. And that it was none of that. It was the new technology. Many Israeli decision makers would probably get very, angry listening to me announcing that Israel has that technology. But it is what it is. We can't just speak half-truths. I can't obviously tell you everything, not even much of what I know. Just what I could tell is small bits and pieces, which still could be helpful. Now, Israel has been using that technology to annihilate Iran's a nuclear program. The last attack was a week ago at the centrifugal facility for Iran. Ironically, Iran put that centrifugal facility in the middle of Tehran, the capital. Reason for that is they don't want anyone to suspect it, and at the same time, they want whoever wants to attack it to take a step back and refrain from attacking a building in the middle of, an urban area. Mm-hmm. What happened is they used a new technology, and they literally vaporized the centrifugal facility beneath the ground and on top. Top of the ground, and it without hurting much of what's around it. And that was the end of the Iranian nuclear program. So, yes, Iran's nuclear program is officially finished, but Iran's ability to rebuild the program is still there. So, and it's so widespread, like the facilities are so widespread with every little bits and pieces. So now Israel is just doing, a sweep covering the bits and pieces left here and there to make sure that Iran won't be able to rebuild the program again. But the program itself is finished. Okay. I can authoritatively confirm over the past 9 days, there have been 4 different attacks in Iranian facilities by this new Israeli technology. And Iran all the time claimed that there were quote unquote unexplainable fire, mysterious fires.
Yeah.
I will leak something that I've already mentioned over Twitter. There will be another attack over the next few days, most likely beginning of next week, by Israel on another facility for Iran, which Iran will also claim it's a mysterious fire. And then I'm going to send it to both to you, Craig, on there to see in Arabic or whatever language Iran's claiming it's just mysterious fire. So why am I announcing this on national radio? Because simply Iran cannot do anything about it. If Israel calls them up and tells them, by the way, we're going to attack you at 9:20 a.m. tomorrow, right after breakfast. Mm-hmm. Nothing Iran can do about it. Israel is not it's not using jets. It's not using any conventional kind of weaponry. So the people, when they wonder whether there would be a war with Iran, there won't be a war with Iran, because it takes two to make war just as much as it takes two to make love. So Iran is not in any position to counterattack. Iran is not in any position to do anything against Israel right now. What Iran can do is utilize its minions to cause distress and harassment to Israel.
Okay, hang on. So that then explains why Iran is now reaching out and trying to establish themselves in Jordan and Afghanistan, why they're trying to up their game in Syria. Right? I mean, if their nuclear program is finished, they've got to start making friends, and they haven't wanted friends because, well, they were going to have nukes.
But the problem is Iran is still, or claiming to still be, enriching uranium.
Well, Iran has claimed to have had a stealth fighter. Iran claimed to have built satellites. Iran has claimed a lot of things, and, you know, it's just a claim. There's right. No evidence of them having any functional nuclear program left. They still have the blueprints and the infrastructure for a program, because that has not been annihilated yet, because it's widespread and vast, but the hearts of it are gone. So think of a body without a brain and a heart. It's still called a body, but, you know.
Right.
So that said, now, Craig was right on the money when he said that this is why Iran is trying to up the ante, and this is where it leads us to Jordan. We should maybe get back to Iran, but in the case of Jordan, they're trying to now openly open the doorways with Jordan, and the king is fully supportive of it. There was a piece in Israeli media in the Jerusalem Post just yesterday, which is, I think, should be very disturbing to any peace-loving person,
right,
be it an American or an Israeli or even an Arab, how Jordan's king is opening the doors, opening the gates wide for Iran to take over the country and even spread the Iranian version of Islam, the Shiite version of Islam, openly through the very encouragement and promotion of that religion by the king himself in a very mesmerizingly shocking fashion to Jordan. We'll get to that, but they're also trying to up the ante with Iran, with the Lebanon. They're also trying to up the ante with Syria. They're trying to, you know, push forward, which is Iran's most effective method of protecting itself, exporting trouble somewhere else. Now,
and a lot of it also has to do with the Iraqi oil also.
Yeah, absolutely. Iran controls Iraq. Now, let's put this in perspective. And this is a little history lesson for the listeners, which is very essential, as it connects to what's happening today, also with the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
The Biden administration took off the Houthi terrorist militias in Yemen. They are Iranian Hashemite militias connected by blood to the Hashemite rulers of Jordan. Those people are a terror group who bombed, claimed to be Islamic. They are Shiites. They are in Yemen. Yemen is a very, for those who can't from pointed on the map. It's right to the southwest of the Arab Peninsula. So it controls, it oversees the naval passageway into Africa and into the Arab Peninsula. It controls the flow of oil. It could affect the flow of even goods and oil to Israel and the rest of the Middle East. So this is a very strategic country, and Iran controls it through militias, which were empowered by Obama. Now, the first week in office, Biden took that terror group off the terror list. Right. So now you can export food to them. You can sell them weapons. You can sell them jets, if you wish. And also, Biden began importing Iranian oil. And there has been a few shipments. And there are less sanctions with Iran. The CIA chief, Mr. Burns, appointed by Biden, is the former ambassador to Jordan.
Yes.
A close friend with Jordan's king, who also was the chair of the negotiations committee of the Iran deal. So I think Mr. Burns is very supportive of a deal with Iran. So this shows you where the CIA is at the moment, which to us, people from the Middle East, both Arabs and Jews, are very problematic. And let's just go back in history to where all of this began. There is a pattern here which you Americans should be concerned about. When the revolution broke out in Iran in 1978 against the Shah, or the king of Iran, the revolution was led by communists and seculars.
Right.
The Toba Party, which is the largest party that led the revolution, was a secular party, a leftist party. Under the nose and the watchful eye of President Carter, and nobody who was in exile in Paris, his name is Khomeini, he was flown on board a French jet and delivered, installed actually, with the full approval of the American administration at the time, to become the leader of Iran against the will of most people who were protesting in the streets. So, and then we find a Reagan administration. It was, you know, Reagan, as much as many might not like to hear this, the real actor during the Reagan's administration was Vice President Bush, mm-hmm. Vice President Bush Sr. And during that time, Israeli weapons were purchased and given to Iran by the U.S. administration.
Right.
And at the same time, you see Obama administration, no, the Clinton administration left huge sanctions in Iran. CNN was promoted, and I was, you know, still living in the United States then, and I couldn't believe my eyes when CNN ran a documentary about the Iranian president calling him the president of the people. And there were, well, the Clinton left the sanctions, and Iranian caviar and Persian rugs were being exported to the United States right from Iran. And then President Bush literally handed down Iraq to the Iranian administration. Some of you might go like, come on, no, not Bush. Well, you didn't have to believe me, but I can't speak about my previous job with the U.S. Department of State, but I got to witness that firsthand, and you didn't have to believe me. All you have to do is to go check the Government Accountability Office, who testified before the Congress, who came to Amman and came to Jordan, went to Iraq, and view firsthand what kind of government was the U.S. supporting in Iraq. It was supporting a pro-Iran government, knowingly so.
Yeah.
And then we had the Obama administration I didn't need to explain what Obama did for Iran. And the only change we witnessed was with President Trump. This man was a patriot, a true American, a man who cared for America, not for other globalist agendas, and who said it loud and clear right from the United Nations podium. He said, and I'm quoting here, "The future is for the patriots, not for the globalists."
Yeah.
So there is a very disturbing bad pattern. And it seems that there are members and actually a whole crowd of people within the U.S. establishment who do favor Iran and support it to the fullest. And this is where it connects to our discussion today. The discussion about Iran, the fact that Iran thought that the fact that Trump is gone, they can do whatever they want, what they were not planning or even thinking, it was a nasty surprise that Israel had obtained a new level of strength, and Israel will be able and will keep to keep hitting Iran day in and day out.
Can I?
So this is,
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
No, I just want to know if this is true from what I'm reading on some of the intel. What Iran is trying to do in Jordan is very sneaky. They're trying, the king is going to allow Iranian Shiite religious pilgrims into the country. And Jordan is predominantly Sunni Muslim. So what he is trying to do in a way is start a war within Jordan between the Shiite and the Sunni.
Well, this is very disturbing because this is what the king did. First of all, the king has been aligned with Iran since 2004. And it's not because he's a rogue element. He is a rogue guy, but he was just doing what several U.S. administrations were doing. It's just common sense, you know. He follows where he goes, where America goes, and the U.S. administrations have been supporting Iran, except for Trump. So it's just natural. So he's not doing anything that would actually make either Bush Jr. or Obama or any of them frown. He was in bed with Iran. He's been in bed with Iran since 2004, collaborating with Iran on several aspects, to the point where when Saudi Arabia demanded that all Arab countries boycott Iran, the king was the only guy who refused to shut down his embassy in Iran. And CNN's Wolf Blitzer asked him about it on live TV in an interview. And in addition, so this collusion has been in progress for now over almost 20 years. The only thing that's changed, it's now coming out in public. So it's the king coming out of the closet. What he's trying to do, what he already did. First of all, in Jordan, they are Muslim Sunnis. In Islam, You cannot, you know, glorify a grave or a dead person. So even Muhammad's grave, we're not supposed to visit Muhammad's grave. The Shiites are the opposite. They think if they go and literally, some of them think we're shipping an actual physical concrete grave would send them to heaven. So there are two totally different religions with opposing views. And what the king did, he went to a Shiite holy site in Jordan, which is actually usually closed because everyone is Muslim, and he prayed there. So imagine, for example, if the U.S. president would go to a mosque all of a sudden and perform Islamic prayers. How would you feel about that? You would be shocked. And then right after he flew to Baghdad, Iraq, which is a puppet state for Iran, and he signed a deal by which Iraqi oil pumped through pipelines into Jordan and then exported by sea to Europe. Iraq's oil is Iran's oil. Because the country as a whole, Iraq is controlled by Iran. There are enough reports in, you know, very reliable international bodies, including government reports, exhibiting how Iraq is just a puppet state for Iran. So this is only going to benefit Iran. In addition, his own advisor was in the Jordanian media, the king's own private advisor said, we're going to, quote, unquote, Iran is going to breathe life into Jordan again. This is all like within 48 hours. Jordanian media, they were promoting these lines, and there are the videos all over the place on YouTube and elsewhere. On Jordanian state TV, they're saying, they're trying to convince us that most Shiites came from Jordan. Another one was trying to convince us, and these are the king's people, the king's, you know, mouthpieces. Another guy was trying to convince Jordanians that, you know, there's nothing wrong with having the Shiite tourists. So it's 1 million. They're saying they're going to bring 1 million Shiite tourists a year, Iranian tourists here, and then that the Iran was going to build an airport and so on. A lot of this, so he's basically pushing the country, you know, fast forwarding the country on a nuclear, with a nuclear speed into becoming an Iranian, openly an Iranian, you know, puppet or satellite state. With that being the case, this is how it all began in Syria. Hmm. I was in Syria while I was still working for the U.S. Department of State. I was in Syria in 2007, and I saw, you know, loads of tourist buses arriving from Iran with so-called Shiite tourists within them. Just, you know, 4 years after that, actually 3 years after that, the same so-called tourists were already occupying all of Syria and fighting against and killing the Syrian people and actually stretching into Lebanon. So Iran is like pretty much like COVID. It hits somewhere and then it spreads very quickly. And with the king doing that, what does this mean for the average American? It means for the average American that you have, you know, another state which is leashing off U.S. taxpayers' money just to breed Iranian ideology and hatred for the Americans, hatred for the United States and the West, and threatening the, you know, one of America's very few reliable allies in the Middle East. Like, America's reliable allies in the Middle East are barely three countries, in my opinion: Israel, United States, and Saudi Arabia. And when Jordan becomes, what already is, but when it becomes more of a Shiite Iranian satellite state, that's going to threaten the Saudi Arabia, that's going to threaten the United Arab Emirates, and that's going to threaten Israel, and that could eventually lead to World War III. So this is playing with fire, and this is happening under the watchful and tolerant eyes of the U.S. administration. I still would love to think, and I actually still trust, that President Biden has good intentions. I don't think President Biden has the crazy ideas and actually doctrine that Obama had.
Well,
for instance, the way he's doing things in Syria and elsewhere. But at the same time, I think turning a blind eye towards this is going to lead us all into disaster. And this is where my warnings have been consistent for years. This guy, Abdullah, is incompetent, indecent, and dishonest with all bad intentions there is.
Right.
And he's in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, in bed with Iran, in bed with the Islamists, and the more he stays in power, and he's only in power because the United States allows him to be, the more he's in power, the more dangerous it is eventually for the average American. And let me just begin by reminding you of the following.
Right.
When the World Trade Center was hit the first time, I think in 1993, was it, or 1992? I think 1993.
'93,
when the World Trade Center was hit the first time, targeted the first time, all three who carried out the attack were Jordanians, and Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind, was the son of a Jordanian army colonel. The guy who established ISIS, his name is Abu Ebench, his name Al-Qaeda in Iraq and ISIS, his name is Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. He was a Jordanian who was actually pardoned from jail, unexplainably pardoned from jail by the king himself. He was serving jail time in Jordan. He was pardoned from jail and took an airplane and left to Afghanistan, then suddenly surfaced in Iraq, killing American soldiers and Iraqi civilians. And he killed so many Muslims because, according to, you know, Al-Qaeda and Islamists, Being just a religious Muslim is not good enough. You get killed too.
Right.
So I can go on and on. Mr. Al-Majali, very few people realize Mr. Al-Majali was Osama bin Laden's. Osama bin Laden's key escort or advisor was a Jordanian who still lives in Jordan. Mm. And maybe I've mentioned this story before, but when I was in my teens, late teens, you know, maybe 1920, I probably mentioned this story in your show before. We were in Amman, and I saw this very tall guy wearing a very strange turban, and he was driving a Chevrolet Caprice with, this is back in 1992, 93. He was driving a Chevrolet Caprice, and he was had Saudi license plates. Again, this is in Jordan, 1993. And I see this very peculiar looking guy, and I kept seeing him back and forth. And it's in our neighborhood, which is where my parents live, a very affluent neighborhood. And a few years after, this guy was in television. And guess who he was? Osama bin Laden was a frequent visitor to Amman, Jordan. And the person who educated him is Sheikh Abdullah Azam. He's a Jordanian who was also very close to the Jordanian government. And Mr. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the caliph of ISIS who got killed during Trump's administration.
Right.
Mr. al-Baghdadi is a Hashemite, belongs to the Hashemite family from which the king's family is. And I can give you at least, off the top of my head, another 10 different examples, which shows you that it all connects to Jordan. Jordan is a key source of the operations of the Muslim Brotherhood. And let's just mention what the king did lately.
Right. Yeah. Now wait a minute, Mudar, hang on just a minute here, because I want to go back here just a little bit. And folks, you're listening to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com with our special guest tonight, Mudar Zakran, the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition. What you were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, Mudar, was how Iran is branching out because they like to cause trouble in other places. You mentioned that you hope that Biden has good intentions. I guarantee you, Biden is not running the show, neither here in the U.S. from a domestic standpoint nor on the world stage. What we saw during the Obama administration was Obama trying to complete a caliphate in the Middle East by creating vacuums of power in various places. I personally am seeing this recurring, so I think Obama is pulling the strings on the Middle East right now via the Biden administration, using Biden and his administration as a puppet. But let me ask you this. As this continues, okay, we're seeing even in Yemen now problems with Yemen and their country's finances. They're out of power. They're out of fuel in Yemen. They're shutting off power grids and shutting down power stations. Do you, Mudar, do you see Iran trying to make a move into there and buddy up there and try to save the Yemenis in the overall notion that they would then have a foothold in that country as well?
And I want to add to that a little bit. Israeli's new prime minister, most Americans don't know much about him. He sort of came out of nowhere. How does he fit in to this equation? Where exactly are his allegiances and alliances? Is he going to stand strong like Bibi Netanyahu did against Iran, or is he going to vacillate?
Well, that's about, you know, the most important question I got today about the new Israeli prime minister and what does it mean for America and the Middle East. First of all, regarding Yemen, I hate to disappoint you, Craig, but Iran already controls 80% of Yemen. Okay. Iran under Obama was able to, first of all, what Obama did was he managed to overthrow Yemen's dictator, who was a good guy when it comes to being anti-radicals, but a bad guy when it comes to treating his own people. But at least he kept the country together. He kept the country safe and terror-free. He was toppled. You know, what we can see, the fingerprints of Obama's administration all right over the place. And right after he was toppled, Yemenites were deliberately obstructed in the effort to build a new government. And we could see the lack of cooperation and deliberate obstruction by the Obama administration. And Iranian militias were immediately welcomed into the country. And within a year, they took over the entire country. Yemen is now controlled by Iran. And the Saudis have been fighting Iran, bombing the Iranian militias in Yemen. They've been bombing them now for almost 5 years with very little help and very little intelligence support from what was then the Obama administration. And then Yemen administration, the Trump administration was helpful. But again, it was too late because Iran was fully installed into Yemen.
Right.
Under the helpful hand of the Obama administration.
But what I'm asking, what I'm asking though is Iran going to come in even stronger in Yemen and bail them out from an energy standpoint to really tighten their grip on Yemen to the point where they've got Yemen in an actual stranglehold?
This is not how Iran does business. The way Iran does business historically, Iran now controls five different Arab countries. The way they do things is they knock the infrastructure down. They create absolute, you know, shortage of everything. Then they start dropping, not to the point of, you know, sufficiency. They keep dropping, you know, to make sure that the other side doesn't die. So they wouldn't provide something sufficient so you become dependent on them. No, they would let you literally starve. When you reach the point of death, then they would give you a bite.
Exactly.
So how they've been controlling Lebanon. This is how they've been controlling Jordan since 2010.
So Lebanon's... So Yemen's problem right now with their lack of power, lack of fuel, has actually been created by Iran.
The same pattern in Iraq. Iraq is a very wealthy country. Even under, when Iraq was under an entire international blockade, Iraq was better off than today under Iran. Same situation with Jordan, because we've seen patterns where, you know, a few things which would be just common sense, and the king would act exactly against them, making the situation worse. So it's the theory of, you know, starving the tiger, and then, you know, making it obey.
Okay, now,
trick in the book.
Diane asked you some very pertinent questions about Prime Minister Bennett in Israel. What can you tell us? Get into what Diane was talking about there regarding the new prime minister in Israel.
Yeah.
Okay. This might offend some of your listeners, but I'm going to say it as it is. I've been on two different occasions. I've been, someone tried to insult me, an Arab journalist, I think he was Egyptian. He tried to insult me by saying that I am the Arab version of President Trump. To me, those were the nicest words of praise I've ever heard.
Yes, a compliment.
Very good, yes.
So, therefore, I'm going to say it as it is. Bibi Netanyahu provided all the necessary lip service for those who wanted peace and those who were patriots and were lovers of both the United States and Israel. But in his actions, Bibi Netanyahu was always aligned to the wrong people. He was a master of saying something and doing something else. So if you just close your eyes, try to listen to his actions rather than his words, you'll see that he had always refused to annihilate Hamas despite the pressure from the Israeli army. He would attack Gaza and then let Hamas go. He always refused to attack Iran. He advised U.S. Congress to attack Iraq and knock down Saddam Hussein against the very advice and the open stance of the Israeli military establishment. The Israeli intelligence were saying, screaming out loud, if Saddam goes, Iran's going to take over. Nonetheless, Bibi, who was not in office then, still went to the U.S. Congress and provided advice, and you can watch that on YouTube, telling them that you should go and knock out Saddam Hussein. And he always refused to let Jordan's king go. And I can also claim I have things which I cannot say for legal reasons, absolute legal reasons, about Bibi's very close and tight connections to King Hussein and his son, King Abdullah. Let's just say they are more than just friends. And I would definitely ask Bibi about his joint ventures with Mr. Mitt Romney, which are no longer a secret. I would ask him if they have any other partners in that business. But that's a different story. So I'm not accusing him of anything. It's just a general question. Do you have any other partners we don't know of regarding your business with Mitt Romney? That said, Bibi was always enslaved to outside forces. Could it be because he's weak? Maybe because he's corrupt? Maybe because he's bought? Someone has bought him out? To me, that could be the option, the box I would tick, but never mind. Maybe because he's just stupid. But one thing he was for sure, he was very close to the globalists, to the point where he would, you know, some American presidents like Bush Jr., he once told the Adelson family, the late Mr. Adelson and his wife, Dr. Adelson, very, very prominent Israel supporters, American billionaires. He once told them, Bush Jr., I cannot be more Israeli than Bibi. Because even by the standards of Bush Jr., the standards Bush Jr. had for Israel were still higher than the ones Bibi had for Israel. But let's fast forward to this prime minister. Prime Minister Bennett is a patriot. Prime Minister Bennett is a self-made millionaire. He's incredibly smart. He's a businessman, and his heart is in the right place. And let me show you one example. When he took over, days after he took over, Hamas wanted to test him. Hamas is the terror group, Palestinian terror group, controlling Gaza south to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Hamas wanted to test Bennett, so they sent, you know, those fiery balloons, arsonist balloons. They would send balloons with, yes, the, you know, with oh, they'd set them on fire and fly them into Israel, and they would land on bushes, homes, playgrounds for children, children's schools, synagogue, and in one case, they burned down a mosque, a Muslim mosque, and they send them to test his reaction. They sent 26 different balloons. In half an hour, Israeli jets were bombing Gaza and bombing strictly Hamas sites.
Yes.
And what was Hamas' reactions? Zilch. Zero.
And isn't that also when the laser weapons were used?
I can't comment about that, but...
Well, we'll take that as a yes. We'll take that as a yes.
Okay. It was, I've already said too much for one interview, but that said, Hamas couldn't do anything because they got the message. They got, since then, he bombed them three times since then. Why wouldn't Hamas send rockets? And right when he bombed them, he just for merely sending off balloons, they came out in media saying, oh, we will not let the Israeli enemy decide when to go for battle. We will respond in our own time. They were scared. So why was Bennett able to scare Hamas in half an hour while Bibi wasn't able to scare Hamas in 12 years? What's different?
Interesting
because
point.
They know he was never going to annihilate Hamas and finish them off to the end. This guy would. Now, let me tell you a secret. Do you remember when President Trump, you know, when they were talking about ISIS, and said ISIS would take 10 years to finish off?
Right.
And Trump said he asked one soldier, how long would it take? And the soldier told him 1 week, and they actually did it in a week. Mm-hmm. And I want everybody to listen to what I'm saying here. Israel could finish Hamas, end Hamas, turn Hamas into history in 2 weeks without destroying Gaza. There will be a lot of collateral damage, but without, you know, wiping out Gaza, Israel, and I repeat, could destroy Hamas in 2 weeks, 14 days.
Interesting.
So this can put you into the bigger picture of things, that what was going on, Bibi was literally allowing it to persist. It could have been because he's weak. It could have been because he's just corrupt. It could have been any different kinds of reasons. But one thing is certain is there's a new sheriff in town. That sheriff is not going to allow nonsense. For the first time in decades, you know, since Begin, for the late Israeli Prime Minister Begin, since then, Israelis actually control their own country, and they're not being controlled by outside forces. And they have the man who's willing to do it. And the more time passes, the more you will realize that this war, this conflict was actually more sustained by the powers that be and kept in place. It's the oldest trick in the book, create a crisis and manage it.
Oh, yeah.
Like Mr. Rahm Emanuel once said, the, you know, wonderful mayor of Chicago,
yeah,
city I personally love, he once said, no crisis should ever go to waste. This is how they were doing things. And this is how the remnants of Obama's administration within Biden's administration seem to want to do things.
Well, let me ask you this about Prime Minister Bennett then, because this is you're making some great points here about the new prime minister. So let me ask you this. How is he feeling towards the King of Jordan?
I can authoritatively confirm that he's laid out his policy, and you can hold me responsible for saying this, because, you know, we have connections, we keep asking. His policy is two things. One, providing support for Jordan, because he wouldn't want to see the king gone. He doesn't want Jordan to become another Syria. So, and two, not interfering in the country's internal or external policies. At the same time, and these are not my words, not his, but people, let's say, in the know, he realizes that it is, you know, quote unquote, and I'm quoting here, Jordan is now open to all forms of possibilities. So it's like saying, you know, I like my neighbor, but at the same time, I realize my neighbor might get infected.
You brought up a lot of interesting points about Bibi especially and what he was trying to do and not do. But I'd also like to know, how does Prime Minister Bennett feel about the, remember what Abdullah's father said, there are no Palestinians, they are Jordanians. Will Bennett support, let's say you, and if you became the president, prime minister of Jordan, would Bennett support you in bringing the people back to their ancestral homeland?
Okay, well, first of all, let me lay out what we know is Bennett's policy and potentially his version of a peace plan.
Okay.
Bennett's policy is that Israel should become sovereign from the river to the sea.
Okay.
His key factor in this is he wants Israel to annex Area C. Area C is almost 60% of the West Bank.
Okay.
He wants to extend citizenship to less than 100,000 people who live in Area C. Most Palestinians live in 8 major cities in the West Bank. So up to 95% live in areas A and B, which are smaller chunks of land within the West Bank. All of those hold Jordanian passports, but thanks to King Abdullah, he kept the passport with him but took away the national social security number. So a passport without a social security number. And Bennett wouldn't mind, to my understanding, a Palestinian state in areas A and B, but that Palestinian state would need a geographic, economic, political, social, and defense exit.
Okay.
So either that state would become dependent on Israel, which even if it was the most peaceful state on earth, imagine if you had another country within the United States that's dependent on you and everything. That's a drainage that which would drain all of Israel's resources. At the same time, the only natural exit is Jordan. So I highly recommend that your listeners would look up an article on the Wall Street Journal entitled, quote unquote, the true state solution, not two, true, T-R-U-E.
Okay.
A True State Solution by Daniel Arbus. Daniel Arbus is a senior or permanent, quote-unquote, permanent member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations has, within its membership, many, if not all, previous U.S. presidents and, potentially the current president, I believe. And he's a senior member there, and he wrote an article entitled The True State Solution, in which he is calling for, you know, a two-state solution where Jordan and the new Palestinian state would become a confederation, which would involve basically a change in the governments of those countries, which would basically, my name is mentioned. He said, you know, if the king, this article is two years old. He said, if the king is not to change his mind, we have a Palestinian who definitely would support the idea.
And right.
Then 15, 20 years down the line, this is in the article, but without the 15, 20 year timeline, there would be confederation between that new state and Israel. Once the indoctrination has finished, once we have banned and outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood and all terror groups, once the education system has changed, once we've introduced secular democracy into the country, which is not against Islam. You know, the United Kingdom is a Christian nation.
Right.
The flag of the United Kingdom bears three different crosses, but the laws are secular. So the identity of the state could be anything. Israel is a Jewish state. It's got a Jewish identity, but Israel is a secular civil state when it comes to its laws.
So, right.
But basically, this is coming. You know, people can reject it. People can deny it. People can say it's never going to happen. People can say that the King of Jordan is going to survive. Well, how could the King of Jordan survive if his own brother attempted to carry out a coup against him just 4 months ago? How would he survive if you look at my Twitter account and you'll find videos of how 3 weeks ago Jordanian tribes opened fire and began full-fledged gun battles within the capital, Amman. Four army officers were shot, one of them severely injured. And these are, you know, by official account. The real numbers could be much higher. And on top of it, they shot at the airport, Jordan's only big airport. They shot at it. And so this is not a country that's stable. We have a shortage of food items. Food prices, you know, it's cheaper to order a meal in Manhattan than in Jordan, with the difference that, you know, in Jordan, the average salary is $700 a month. So you imagine, you know, we have the highest power bill, energy bill in the Middle East. People can't eat. There's no water, complete shortage of water. So this is a country that's collapsing. So people must accept that the king cannot be sustained. He's a very expensive ally to keep and not even a good ally. So people must accept this and must move forward towards, let's call it Plan B. Anyways, we're not concerned. As far as I'm concerned, you know, you'll find there has been a huge campaign to defame me, discredit me. You, Dan, were witness to some of it.
Oh, yes, I was.
And, you know, you can just look up an example. You can look up Wikipedia. You'll see my name on Wikipedia with all kinds of horrendous stories. And when you go to the search, you know, like the editing history of that page, you'll find all the edits made by one single individual. And we've tried, you know, I've got an American lawyer, California-based lawyer. He got in touch with Wikipedia three times to no avail. We even exhibited to them that, you know, all the changes were illegally made. You know, in one case, the editor used a Facebook post as a reference, which we explained to them it's against their own rules and they wouldn't budge. Basically, you know, if you step on the foot of those globalists, some of them I might call radical leftists, because I have a lot of leftist friends in high places who actually matter and who actually have good intentions and do good things. You know, you could tell some, obviously there is a deep establishment somewhere, and if you offend them, they would annihilate you and they would begin with your reputation. Wikipedia is no exception, and we witnessed firsthand how they actually seem to target people with certain political views.
Well, you have to remember something also. You would not be attacked in the way you are attacked if you weren't effective in what you're doing. They are afraid of you. They're afraid you're actually winning the public discourse in Jordan, and that scares them.
Exactly. If I was a nobody, why would they bother?
Exactly. Well,
yeah. It wouldn't be worth their effort if you weren't, you know. Look, Alan West, and I know you know of Alan West. West has always said that you never take flak until you're over the target. So you must be directly over the Jordanian king's target, because they won't let up on you.
Well, I can assure you, and, you know, let me just confirm this. August, September, 2 months. Will be very, very critical in Jordan's modern history, and therefore the history on the future of the Arab-Israeli conflict, and therefore America's direct interest, and of course that of Israel too. We are expecting major changes and major, unfortunately, major unrest as the people become poorer and as food and water become even more scarce. And I'm talking literally food being scarce at the moment in Jordan. And things cannot remain the same. So I think the next 90 days in Jordan will be like nothing you've even expected. And I want everybody to listen. My name is Mudar Zoran, a Jordanian, proudly a Jordanian of Palestinian heritage. And I am the next president of the Republic of Jordan.
We sure hope so.
I know.
And I like how you call it the Republic of Jordan.
Yes.
Just like the United States is a republic. I really like that you call it that.
It's the greatest republic in history, with the greatest constitution in history, and everything we've witnessed for the past few decades have been desperate attempts to undermine the greatest constitution in the history of mankind. I do remember. I was listening to the radio when I was in somewhere in Massachusetts, and to that, a very famous radio person, his name is Rush Limbaugh. I'm sure you know
him. Oh, yes.
Of course. And one of his callers called and said, you know, there is a conspiracy against this country that's 60 years old. And I was like, this is one very paranoid man. And now I tell you that he was right, in my opinion. They want to undermine the United States. They want to compromise it, what it stands for. They want to, you know, the globalist evil forces want to take away the guns and therefore the power from the people. They want to create unrest. they couldn't defeat the American people and make them submit to socialism, to power of the state over the power of the people. So they kept them occupied with trivial laws, you know, turned their tax code into 70,000 pages where you will always be wrong when you go by the book, introduced, you know, ridiculous traffic laws, which could send you to jail for, you know, forgetting to renew your insurance. Mm-hmm. This is not what America stands for. This is not what the founding fathers had worked very hard to establish. So I believe there will be a strong comeback for America, because she's been the comeback kid of the universe. You know, she could get a little sick, but she can always stand on her feet and show and make an example for the rest of the world.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mudar, we're starting to run out of time here. And folks, our guest this evening on Right Side Patriots is Mudar Zakran. He is the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition, and he has been giving us an in-depth, and I mean in-depth, intel briefing on what's going on in the Middle East. I need to let folks know, if you've missed any part of tonight's show, we'll have this up as a podcast. What you need to do is go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, and we will have this entire show put up there as a podcast. And Mudar, before we let you go, and like I said, we've just got a couple of minutes left, it is my understanding that the Kinglet of Jordan is going to be in Washington, D.C. 10 days from today on July 19th. And I just need you to understand, Mudar, that he is not going to be there to negotiate with Biden. Now, he'll be in the room with Biden, but in reality, he is negotiating with Obama. He's trying to bend Obama's ear because Obama is the man behind the curtain in this country right now. Biden is a puppet. Harris is a puppet. They are Obama's puppets. So when you think back to what the situation was when Obama was in the White House, know that Obama's home is just a couple of miles from the White House today. And when the king is in D.C., he is going to be there to do deals with Barack Hussein Obama.
And what do you think will Mr. Obama's position be on the king bringing in 1 million Iranians into Jordan?
Diana,
remember, Obama was the one that pushed that very bad nuclear deal. Obama is 100% behind Iran. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid for Israel. I'm afraid for Jordan.
Yep.
I'm afraid for all the good people in the Middle East. Obama does not have your interests at heart. He has his interests at heart. He has the globalist interests at heart. And he's got the money to push everything forward because his pocketbook is George Soros.
Well, we can always pray, and I would always believe in the strength and intervention of a supreme being called God, whether you believe in him or not, or anyone believes in him or not, that I always believe that humankind and the human race will prevail. Good.
Oh, I do
evil,
too.
Good versus evil. And at the same time, let's just remember that Israel is not going to sit and watch while Iran occupies its longest borders.
Exactly.
Let me just finish with this remark. The Supreme Ayatollah made a declaration in 2015. He said, according to him, we will place revolutionary guards at the Jordanian borders with Israel soon.
Wow.
When I read that, everybody was laughing. I wasn't, because I knew he was dead serious.
Right.
One thing I can assure you of, Israel won't allow it to happen. And good. We, the Jordanian people, were not stupid, because something happened last week. Both the Jordanian majority Palestinian heritage and the tribal Bedouin tribes, they issued a joint threat to the king that if you bring Iran, we're going to be, you have to walk, you know, you have to walk on our bodies first. These were the words. You have to walk on our dead bodies first. So This is serious. People are not going to take it for one reason. It's not about ideology. It's what Iran did to our cousins, brothers, and sisters in Syria. You know, rapes, murder, massacre, Nuclear attacks, you name it. So we know what this is going to bring. And, you know, the more they push it, and let me just end on this positive note. What you are listening to are signs of despair. Signs of running around like a headless chicken. And there's a very famous Arab piece of poetry, it's an ancient one, that says, don't you think that somebody's dancing is out of joy? A bird would act as if it's dancing when that bird is slaughtered. That, I think, is what Iran and her globalist masters are doing. Thank you very, very much for having me.
Yeah, and Rudar, we hope to have you again, and we can't wait till you're inaugurated as president of Jordan.
Inshallah, God willing, it will be. Thank you very much, yes. Craig and Diane.
Thanks, Mudar.
Mudar Zakran, our good friend. It's so great to have him back on the air, Diane. And Mudar, we wish you all the success in the world and all the safety in the world as you continue in your quest to make things better in the Middle East.
And we Thank will you. Get this up all over tomorrow so more people can hear what you had to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless you all. Take care. And God bless America.
Thank you, Mudar. Well, Diane, I think that just pretty much wraps up tonight's show. And we're just thrilled to have Mudar back on the air and know that he's okay.
Yes. Yes, he and his family are okay. We were quite worried about him there for quite a while.
Yes, we were. So let's wrap this up. Time to say goodnight, Diane.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Tuesday.